thirsty in the fights, but he died too young. When the big time had just begun. Sing his song for the outlaw. Sing his song for the way he makes you feel. Young and proud and strong, southern to the core. There is no score to settle now. Say some good old calling home.
Leonard Skinner. Yeah, Doc Holliday's Song for the Outlaw. How about that? Here on the October the 20th, 2014, Moon's Day. Hope you had a good weekend. Yeah, hope you had a good Sun's Day. Yeah. And we're at P.O. Box 401, as usual. Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. That's where you send your snail mail, your donations for the radio show, and anything else you think we ought to be interested in. I know we get 99% off of the internet, so we don't get too many snail mails except for the donations. So, but that's okay, because the internet's fast and furious. Boy, I'll tell you, on the front page of, I think, Saturday's what was it? The Wall Street Journal, man. I'll tell you. There's a picture on the front page of the Saturday and Sunday issue that you got to see. They may run this in other papers, too, because there was a summit meeting over there, and I forget where they had it. I guess it was Milan, Italy. And it shows a big picture of Angela Merkel. Yeah, the gal from Germany. She's on one side of the table and Putin's on the other, and Merkel's looking at him and pointing a finger. I don't think, not pointing a finger right at him, but she's talking to him, and they say that pointed exchange, German Chancellor Angela Merkel and Russian President Vladimir Putin found little common ground at Milan on Friday. But what I thought was really cool about this picture was, if you look at Putin, he's standing straight and erect, looking pretty much straight ahead. And if you look at his hands, the one hand is being made into a fist, and the other hand's on its way. And I know what he's thinking. You bitch, you don't mess with me, bitch, or I'm going to cream you. I don't think Germany's got what it had, you know. Well, I know it don't have what it had in the 30s, in the 40s. So Merkel better watch herself, because I think she's a politician. But I think Putin, he means it. And so I'd tell Merkel, hey, you better lay off that shit. Anyhow, if you can't find it anywhere else, you can go to the your local library and dig out the Saturday Sunday issue. And it's not so much his emotionless face, but his hands beginning to be clenched in a fist. Anyway, I like that stuff. I think it was last Thursday. Usually, my lady and I go out to a movie on Sunday or something, some kind of entertainment. But anyhow, we went on Thursday, and there was this movie, Girl Gone or Girl Lost or something like that. I don't have it right in front of me. But I'm telling you, that movie pissed me off. It was very effective. Talk about the double, 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 triple cross. You might want to see this movie or wait till it comes out on, other Netflix or something, because it's a good movie, but every guy should be really pissed off when he watches this movie. I'm telling you. Got nothing to do with race. It's all white people. Well, I see they had a pumpkin riot up in New Hampshire. And from the looks of the television coverage, it was almost all white. I'm telling you, the white guys are white people are going nuts now on a Halloween celebration. Had tear gas, cops had to use tear gas and rubber bullets on those boys up there in New Hampshire. I thought it got too cold up there to do things like that. Looks like the head of the Chinese system over there, the government, getting a little worried. Beijing, China. Central bank is planning to inject 200 billion yuan, which is 32.6 billion, into the banking system, according to financial executives briefed on the matter, as recent credit easing measures have failed to push the world's second largest economy back to stronger growth rates amid deepening worries about global slowdown. Yeah, well, they have an internal problem they got to worry about over there in China. They know what revolution is like once it gets started. I dropped into Radio Shack yesterday, which I hate to do because they're higher than hell. But I was looking for a little plug, electronic plug. But anyhow, I was rolling around the store and looking at their little portable pocket recorders. And I looked down on the bottom shelf and I saw this box there, a couple of them. And it's a digital recorder. And it's voice-activated Vox, built-in 4 GB memory. Got SDHC card slot, analog to digital conversion, and comes with a power supply, or you can run it battery. Let's see here. Get my specs on. Recorder makes it easy for you to capture and preserve lectures, conversations, and more. It has a built-in 4 GB memory that can record over 260 hours. If you need more capacity, you can add an SDHC memory card. Best of all, since it's digital, you don't have to hassle with cassette tapes. There's even an auxiliary input jack that enables you to convert old analog recordings. All files can be conveniently transferred to your computer using included USB cable plus voice activation mode. Vox records only when the internal microphone picks up sound. That way you don't waste time listening to silence during playback. Well, anyhow, this thing must have been about $75. And they had them down to $9.95. Can you believe that? So if you're... I'll tell you, even if you don't need it right now, at that price, drop by your local Radio Shack store and see if they've got this in the store, and if it's on sale like that. Let me see, what's a model number here? Whoa! Hold it. It's called a Grabador Digital, and it's catalog number 1400214. That's I'll do that again. SKU/catalog1400214. Now, if they're selling them off and they don't have one in your store at that price, well, check their online sales for Radio Shack. They may have it. And so anyhow, that's so they only had two. I bought them both. And that was the best deal I've made in a long time. Every now and then I lose the small pocket ones. I'm missing one right now I'm looking for. Now, this recorder is not a pocket recorder. It's about 4 or 5 inches by 4 or 5 inches. So, but it's well worth it. Well, we hear of feds knocking people off once in a while. Maybe all the time. I don't know. But here's a story about Michael Hastings that is alleged it was no accident when that big Mercedes blew up. Let's listen to what they've got to say.
Exclusive new details in the death of award-winning journalist Michael Hastings. The FBI said that Hastings was never under investigation despite the journalist's apparent concerns that he was the target of a federal probe. The 33-year-old was killed in a fiery one-vehicle crash early Tuesday morning in Hancock Park. Hastings is best known for a 2010 magazine article that led to the resignation of General Stanley McChrystal, who was the former U.S. and NATO forces commander in Afghanistan. Our Carolyn Costello received an exclusive email Hastings sent just before his tragic death.
I thought he was a great person. I mean, he spoke the truth. I mean, he said what needed to be said. He said what a lot of people were scared to say. You know, and it does offend a lot of people, but the truth hurts.
Staff Sergeant Joseph Biggs knew Michael Hastings well. Hastings was embedded with Biggs' unit in Afghanistan back in 2008. He tells us the two have kept in touch over the years. It had been several months since they last spoke when Biggs got an email from Hastings that didn't seem quite right.
Monday morning, I woke up and I get an email and it's very panicked.
Biggs says he was blind copied on the email sent to Hastings' colleagues. It reads, "Hey, the feds are interviewing my, quote, close friends and associates. Perhaps if the authorities arrive at BuzzFeed GQ or HQ, may be wise to immediately request legal counsel before any conversations or interviews about our news gathering practices or related journalism issues. Also, I'm on to a big story and need to go off the radar for a bit."
It alarmed me very much. I wrote a few things. I told a few people about it. I just said it doesn't seem like him. In a sense, I just had this gut feeling and it just really bothered me.
The email was sent just before 1 Monday afternoon. 15 hours later, Hastings was killed in this fiery crash on Highland Avenue. Strangers showed up to the scene to pay their respects.
I'm hoping nobody was following him and he just lost control.
Breaking news photographer Scott Lane happened to be less than a mile from the scene of the crash Tuesday morning and shot this video. Video from his car's dash camera caught what appears to be Hastings' Mercedes minutes before the crash, speeding through a red light. 34 seconds pass, and no other cars pass through the intersection.
There's no cars that are following him. And he flies by, 10 seconds, 20 seconds, 30 seconds goes by. No cars are following him.
While conspiracy theories circulate on the internet about what might have led to this fiery crash, Staff Sergeant Biggs tells us he just hopes to learn the truth about the events leading up to his friend's death.
Well, I just I'm going to be willing to help and do whatever I can, though. I want to make sure that people will look and look into this story and make sure that they find out whatever happened.
And the LAPD said today there appears to be no foul play in the crash that led to Michael Hastings' death. Carolyn Costello, KTLA 5 News.
He was killed in a fiery car accident in West LA. You may recall this story. The award-winning journalist captured fame with his 2010 Rolling Stone wartime article that forced General Stanley McChrystal to resign as commander of the U.S. forces in Afghanistan. This week, Kimberly Dvorak spent the day in Los Angeles to learn more about this accident. She joins us now on set talking a little bit about what she learned. And, you know, it's not really into conspiracy theories so much, but it really is about finding out the facts about what happened here. Aren't we interested in that?
Yes, absolutely. There are a number of scenarios that could have played out, and it's still too early in the investigation as nobody's been granted the police report, you know, that details exactly what happened on scene. But clearly, there are a couple things that stood out in my mind when I went up and visited the scene and visited law enforcement.
What stood out in your mind? You said you couldn't get the police report. They weren't giving that out.
Yeah.
So what else stood out in your mind?
Well, the fact that when you go to the LA Police Department, then you go to the fire department, and you go to the different agencies, they all said they couldn't comment, and some of them said they were told not to comment on the story. So that kind of stands out. If, you know, we look at the NSA, the government says if you have nothing to hide, don't worry. I think it kind of has a reverse role here. Now,
I think we have video of the scene. If we could show the video, you can see what we're kind of give you an idea of what we're talking about. There is the actual scene.
Okay, so as far as the accident goes and things that we do know, it was an extremely hot fire. And I've talked to military personnel who have said that this is a extremely hot fire, that this is not something you normally see with a car like this. This is a 2013 Mercedes-Benz. And a statement from Mercedes said that they are aware of the accident and waiting to help the LAPD, but they have not got the call from Los Angeles Police Department as of yet. So that intensity of the fire is very concerning. And also the placement of the engine and the drivetrain, as we see here, they are completely between 150 and 250 feet from the accident. However, the car was going south, and the engine and drivetrain were behind it. And after I spoke with a couple of university physics professors, they said in an accident like this, the engines and whatnot would go with the forward velocity of the.
So, what does your gut tell you in something like this? You've been on a lot of these stories. What are you looking at, and where are you going with this?
Well, I'm looking at all possibilities. I mean, he could have been drinking and driving. That's certainly something he could have done. He was near the clubs on Sunset Boulevard, so that's a possibility. But I'm more inclined to believe that there were absolutely zero skid marks. So something else happened. Either the car malfunctioned or something was on the car that allowed that to trigger and blow up. Mercedes says their cars just don't blow up. They take great care for them not to do so.
You said something also very interesting, that cars can be remotely controlled. Is that you'd mentioned something to that effect?
Absolutely, and that came out of the University of San Diego here. They did a report in 2010, which they took like a basic car, like a Nissan Sentra, and using an iPad like we all have here on the desk, they were able to hack into the car system and operate the accelerator, the brakes, windshield wipers, lights, steering. So there are so many factors in play here. There's a lot more investigation that needs to be taken here, and I will continue to follow it. Obviously, if there's any kind of foul play involved, we want to make sure we get that out to the public, although the LAPD has already ruled foul play out of this, which means that we should have access to these police reports in a timely manner.
Kim Dvorak, thanks this morning.
Thank you.
Death in Los Angeles. And there is new information with regards to that story, correct?
Yes, there is.
What have you learned? And I know you talked to some family members, did you not?
I spoke with some very close friends of the family.
Okay.
I think the most concerning thing that I heard, and again, I just want to say I have not confirmed this with Michael Hastings' wife, but a close family friend did confirm that Michael's body was sent home in an urn, meaning he was cremated. And it wasn't the request of the family that went forward and asked for something like that. In fact, the family wanted Michael's body to go home. And for a coroner to go out and do an autopsy and then send a body home in this...
In an urn
is shocking for a couple of reasons. If there was any evidence in his, body at the
alcohol,
time of death...
drugs.
Anything, that's gone. That evidence is now all gone. And so.
And by the way, Mr. Hastings hadn't had a drink in about 5 years.
5 years. Okay. So the
according to him.
According to his family
according
members.
According to his family.
5 years. It had been 5 years. He'd given up drinking and he partaked in a little bit of a drug.
This is the journalist that was killed in a crash in Los Angeles. He had come out with the article in Rolling Stone magazine about Stanley McChrystal in 2010. And he was working on another big story, we believe, about General Petraeus.
Possibly NSA, CIA. Mm. We're not for certain. Now, the folks that I'm talking to have said that he spoke with an attorney, and the attorney that he spoke with has all of the information on the story he was working on. And he did not even want to tell his wife about this because he said he wanted to protect her from knowing anything. So if anything were to happen to him, nothing could happen to her.
Is the family considering any action with regards to the body being cremated? As we understand.
Okay, well, the wife has gone out and she has hired a private investigator to look into the matter. What I hear from the parents, they kind of just want to grieve the death of their son and they want to move on from it. And they, as of right now, haven't reached out to say they're going to, you know, go.
Well, boys and girls, that's showbiz. Did they knock him off or didn't they? I'm inclined to agree with Mercedes-Benz that they don't have cars that blow up. That expensive of a car, they got so many protections in it. So anyhow, we'll see. But even if they figure out who they think it would be, hell, they'll never go to trial, never go to jail. No one goes to jail except poor people in this country or political crazy people like myself, and there's guys on the left too. I know rogue progressive, well, I'll tell you, he gets way out there with his investigations and stuff, and I don't know. If he had a car wreck, I'd be sure it was some kind of assassination. Well, if you go back to the 70s when this cruise ship was taken over by the PLO and a guy by the name of Klinghoffer got pushed off the deck into the ocean in his wheelchair by the PLO. Well, they've got an opera now, a Klinghoffer opera. That'd be interesting to know how that goes. Anyhow, they were having, I guess it's tonight, 10:52 a.m. That sounds wrong. Protesters plan demonstration outside Lincoln Center in New York City. I guess they had over 1,000 people out there in front, mostly Jews, demonstrating against this opera. Well, it'd be quite interesting to see how they can make an opera out of pushing a Jew in a wheelchair off the deck of a cruise ship. Well, they had a rally up there in, a rally up there in Springfield, Oregon on Saturday with citizens pushing back against one man who distributed racist or racial separatist information. Quote, diversity is white genocide, unquote. Well, it is, at a local high school earlier in the week, reports KMTR. A man identifying himself as Jimmy Marr attended the rally and took credit for the flyers, explaining it was trying to break through the media blackout with white genocide and get a chance to say my piece and get exposure so people know what white genocide is, unquote. Marr, who maintains an account at the white supremacist website Stormfront, explained that white genocide partially refers to how the U.S. was founded by white Europeans and how minorities have changed the U.S. culture. He frequently wears a Scottish Highlands dress and plays bagpipes while he distributes the message. Last year, Marr and some associates displayed banners on a bridge over a major freeway reading, anti-racist is the code word for anti-white, which is true. According to Marr, his viewpoint is part of the diversity of the area, saying, quote, this is where old hippies go to die, right? And we honor diversity, so it's time people can honor mine, unquote. The phrase, quote, anti-racist is a code word for anti-white, unquote, has a long history in the white supremacist circles developed as part of the strategy by former Republican congressional aide, minor Reagan administration appointee Bob Whitaker, after he embraced white power following his stint in government service. While speaking with reporters, Marr was surrounded by protesters who described his message as disturbing and hateful. Quote, "There's no place for those comments here," said Dr. Hertika Martin, the superintendent of Springfield Schools. Quote, "We cannot continue to hate other people, and so we need to make sure we are working together as a community in order to bring people together and let them know this is a safe place. Except when the niggers running around." Michael Kerrigan, program director of the Community Alliance of Lane County and father of a daughter adopted from India, rejected Marr's views. Well, so what? Everybody's got an opinion. "I'm here to tell teens I have their back. I have my daughter's back, and I have the back of those kids at Springfield High School," he said. What does that really mean? You mean if Marr to pull out a .45, he'd have still had his back? Yeah, he'd have his back all right. He'd be running down the road a mile a minute. Following the rally, attendees spread out through the neighborhood, handing out hate-free zone flyers and speaking with neighbors. Ho, ho, ho. Let's see if I can get some video off that. Hold it. Whoa, wait a minute.
What truly separates us from our competition is the expectation that Kevin has for us to go the extra step for our customers. Sometimes that's...
Now I got this thing screwed up to where... Okay, now let's start all over again if I can. Well, that's something else. I had an ad from Kevin Cohen jump into my way there. Oh, jeez.
Activists, officials, and supporters came together at Springfield City Hall Plaza, speaking out against racist flyers. Thanks for joining us on News Source 16 at 6:30. I'm Kelsey Dudley.
And I'm Kat Walcott. News Source 16, Sina Sweeney has more on our top story tonight. She joins us live in the studio. Now, Sina, what sparked the rally?
Kat, the rally is in response to racist flyers that were distributed at Springfield High School earlier this week. Activists at the rally are banding together, hoping to prove that love is all you need.
Their heart is filled with malice. Their throat is an open grave. With their tongues, they tell lies. It's a part of evil.
People gathered together after racist flyers were distributed at Springfield High School with a message saying diversity is white genocide. The rally organized by the Community Alliance of Lane County had a clear message.
Springfield is a dynamic and diverse community. It's a wonderful place. So it's critical that when a particular individual or a community is targeted, the community comes together to have their back.
Kerrigan has an adopted daughter from India. He says by supporting this rally, he is not only standing up for her, but for all children.
I'm here to have young teens, have teens of color, I have their back. I have my daughter's back, and I have the back of those kids at Springfield High School.
Jimmy Marr attended the rally. He was the man who claims he distributed the flyers.
Try to break through the media blackout on white genocide, basically to get what I'm getting right now, a chance to say my piece and get some exposure to some more people so they understand more about what white genocide is.
But even during our interview, people were upset with his comments, and they swarmed him with signs.
There is no place for them here. We cannot continue to hate other people, and so we need to make sure that we're working together as a community to bring people together and to let people know that this is a safe place.
The attendees say this is a space for tolerance and love, and hate does not belong. After the rally, attendees went door to door passing out hate-free zone flyers and spoke with neighbors. Live in the studio, Sina Sleem, News Source 16.
Well, I'm happy Mr. Marr wasn't attacked and brutalized. One thing about it, the crowd was 95, 99% white. and a whole lot of obese white people out there on his ass. Also, the last woman you heard was a black. I think she's a Caribbean black who's a superintendent of schools and must be an almost all-white school. I mean, you know, you got to go out and try to reform these people. I mean, I give respect to Mr. Maher for saying his piece, and he did it quite civilly and so forth. The crowd wasn't so civil, but at least they didn't attack him physically. But there's a whole lot of people out there understand this situation. They're not going to go down there and support Maher, but they're out there. What they would ever do actively, I question it. And getting your name and so forth associated with Stormfront, I would question. This is not necessarily attacking Stormfront, but I think I would use fake names and so forth like that, because it doesn't do you any good to have your real name and maybe your address found out in a lot of places. It could get you killed. Now, on Monday, the U.S. Supreme Court agreed to decide whether hotel operators have grounds to challenge a Los Angeles City ordinance that allows police to view guest registries, a power that the local officials say helps them investigate crimes, including prostitution. Well, yeah, but you can't go into the desk clerk in a hotel and ask if somebody's there. They won't tell you anything. The City of Los Angeles asked the Supreme Court to intervene after an appeals court said the ordinance violated the U.S. Constitution's Fourth Amendment, which protects against unlawful searches and seizures. And I agree, they should not be able to get into the registry of the hotel without a warrant. If they've got probable cause, they've got evidence to back it up, well, then maybe, okay? Well, Sunday, the fans of the St. Louis Rams clashed with the Ferguson protesters. They're out there demonstrating for Mr. Brown, the dead Negro. And one of the St. Louis Rams fans said they had to fly American flag upside down, so he got in their face, and they had to separate him with the cops. How about that? I'll send it along to you. Boy, guys are really taking it in hand out there in Oklahoma. An Oklahoma man was taken into custody late last week after police said he shot at his ex-girlfriend because she was not getting out of their home fast enough. Tulsa police told KOKI that a woman reported that her ex-boyfriend fired the shot at her after she decided to leave the failed relationship. Quote, she decided that she was going to leave the residence today, and she was gathering up her things to do that. Apparently, she just wasn't moving fast enough for him, Tulsa Police Department Corporal DeMiro Gay explained. As the woman collected her belongings and prepared to walk out the front door, the man allegedly fired a long gun inside the residence. Officers only found evidence of one shot being fired in the home. There you go. And now we go down to Texas. The Liberty County Sheriff's Office is looking for five men that reportedly opened fire at a party Sunday morning because they lost the drinking game. According to the Houston Chronicle, deputies were called to the home in Cleveland area where the five men lost a game of beer pong and then started shooting at partygoers. At least two people were treated for gunshot wounds. Diaza Jackson, sounds black to me, suffered a gunshot wound to the leg and was in stable condition after being taken to St. Elizabeth Hospital. Decorus Rucker, sounds like a black again, 24, was treated for a gunshot wound in his leg at the Kingwood Hospital. Liberty County Sheriff's Officer identified Rucker as one of the men responsible for the shooting. I see those man-like black tennis player gals, sort of the Serena Williams, I think, Williams, slams Russian official over racism.
Slammed the president of Russia's Tennis Federation for racist and sexist slurs he made on a television chat show. Serena and Sister Venus were dubbed the Williams brothers by Shamil Tapashev.
I thought his comments were very insensitive. I thought they were extremely sexist as well as racist at the same time, and I thought they were, in a way, bullying.
The WTA Tour has suspended the Russian tennis president for 1 year.
So, the guy gets suspended for a year. There she sits giving this talk, and she's got her hair bleached blonde. This nigger. Isn't that sort of racist? Isn't that being anti-black to try to make your hair look like you're a blonde Swede? That took place down in Australia, Brisbane. They don't treat their tennis officials very nice. Maybe they're just anti-Russian down there. Well, isn't this the way it always happens? The Israeli siege of the Gaza Strip has brought with it a depressingly familiar ritual. The Israeli military destroys large swaths of the ghettoized coastal enclave, leaving tens of thousands homeless, a trail of carnage and piles of rubble. Then Western and Arab diplomats rush to some Middle Eastern capital to play janitor to the Jewish state, pledging billions in aid to clean up Israel's mess. And like clockwork, Israel destroys everything all over again just a year or two later, bombarding Gaza with unprecedented furiosity. When Israel's international janitorial crew gathered this week in Cairo with a pledge to raise $5 billion to help rebuild the $8 billion in damage Israel caused to Gaza's civilian population, it was assured by Israeli Minister of Transportation, Yisrael Katz, that its efforts were utterly futile. The Gazans must decide what they want to be, a Singapore or Darfur, Katz remarked, leveling the threat of genocide against the fantasy of economic prosperity. Quote, they can pick between economic recovery and war and destruction. If they choose terror, the world should not waste its money. If one missile will be fired, everything will go down the drain. The message was not lost on the diplomats assembled in Cairo as one AFP. We have seen infrastructures projects that we have contributed to which have been destroyed. The diplomat complained that the sustained Israeli assaults on Gaza's infrastructure had prompted considerable donor fatigue. Johan Schar, head of the Development of Cooperation for the Swedish Consulate in Occupied Palestine, conceded that Israel's limitless capacity for violence had rendered the conference a fruitless endeavor. Quote, no one can expect us to go back to our taxpayers for the third time to ask for contributions to reconstruct, and then we simply go back to where we were before it all began, he moaned. That's out of the question. Only about half the $5 billion pledged at Cairo would actually be budgeted towards Gaza's reconstruction. The rest, according to the Palestinian Authority, Prime Minister Rami Hamdallah, would help keep his unelected government afloat in the West Bank, where 44% of its civil service corps are employed in the security sector, paid to the police, fellow Palestinians on behalf of Israel's occupation. Under the guise of restoring the basic functions of Gaza, an entity that will be uninhabitable by 2020, according to the UN, and which is substantially unlivable today, the diplomats in Cairo found a backdoor channel to sustain the police state that rules the West Bank's ever-shrinking Bantustans. Quote, without a political breakthrough, I think we'll probably end up giving, but it will be repackaged, the assistance that we already gave, a European diplomat told the UN News Service, IRIN, in reality, none of it will be new money. There isn't a terrible amount of political commitment or hope. Even the diplomats gathering in Cairo knew the donor conference was a farce that would do little to revive or relieve the suffering of Gaza's besieged population, yet none appeared willing to stray from the status quo. Oh, jeez. Oh, man. Oh. Let's see here. Where am I at? The destruction that rained down on Gaza this summer was discussed in Cairo as though it was the result of a random natural disaster, a storm, and not the malevolent wrath of an anarchistic settler colony armed to the teeth by the world's lone superpower, the United States. Indeed, Israel's violence against Gaza's civilian population was scarcely mentioned at all, nor were any diplomatic measures against it proposed. And with Hamas barred from participation in the conference, the government of Gaza was unable to raise the issue. In other words, the government of the land that was destroyed and the buildings and the people that were killed is not even able to be at the meeting. This is all bullshit. It's all bullshit. Now, if the United States wasn't giving them all these weapons and all this cash, they would need all that stuff to defend themselves in case, say, Egypt attacked them, which there's nothing to, at the present that says that's going to happen, but they would need every plane they could get and every soldier and every automatic weapon. But as long as there's a steady flow of free weaponry, planes and everything else to Israel, they've got the hardware to carry on this kind of destruction. But in reality, you see what they said, the Hamas, the government there in the area, that government is taking over half the money donated to pay the paychecks of their police force, which is nothing but another socialist type situation. It'll never end. It'll never end until they're all dead. I mean, on both sides. Goes on to say, Kerry appeared at the lectern. He pledged a piddling $2,012 million to Gaza, while he's giving billions to Israel. Nearly $700 million less than the U.S. gave after the 2008-2009 Israeli assault known as Operation Cast Lead. He then proceeded to gush over the efforts of Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi, whose primary achievement since winning a fraudulent election has been suffocating Gaza from the south, wrecking the tunnel economy that enabled the importation of everything from medical supplies to construction material. Quote, I think it's fair to say Sisi has really helped to reaffirm the pivotal role of Egypt was playing this region for so long, said Kerry, another war criminal, conferring legitimacy on a despot torn from the script of Woody Allen's Bananas. The military coup and subsequent massacres of peaceful protesters that Sisi oversaw were now forgotten, as were the 40,000 political prisoners languishing in Egyptian jails. Hours after the event, Kerry met privately with Sisi to promise a shipment of 10 Apache attack helicopters, his reward for a job well done. Jeez. Oh, man, it's so sickening. They don't keep anything secret. It's right out in the open. All this corruption, all the treason, all the crap is right out in the open for everybody to see, but nothing changes. I'll tell you, I don't know. We probably had as bad or worse as Kerry, but I think he's probably right at the top of the list of the worst representatives we've ever had. And I shouldn't say we, because he's not my representative at all.
Dear white people, the minimum requirement of black friends needed to not seem racist has just been raised to 2. Sorry, but your weed man, Tyrone, does not count.
Dear White People is about a group of black students navigating the social, political, and racial minefield of an elite, predominantly white Ivy League university. In his review, A.O. Scott writes, Dear White People is one of the smartest and most fearless debuts from an American filmmaker in quite some time.
Black people can't be racist since we don't stand to benefit from such a system.
Knowing but not snarky, self-aware but not solipsistic, open to influence and confident in its own originality.
How come the only black movies Hollywood wants to make are ones with black mammies in fat suits? Yeah.
Or black women in pain, man.
So basically, we got black people dying in the past and black people dying in the present.
It's a clever campus comedy that juggles a handful of hot potatoes. Race, sex, privilege, power, with an elegant agility and only an occasional fumble.
Chill, Sam. Damn, all right? Let the man...
Got this.
You want to see this movie, and you will want to talk about it afterwards, even if the conversation feels a little awkward. If it doesn't, you're doing it wrong.
I reject the stereotype that African-Americans do not tip. I will leave 25, just to prove that I can.
Well, there's one to probably ignore, a movie out called Dear White People. Obviously, it's going to be anti-racist and all that kind of stuff. So, if you want to be punished, go see it. Well, a German mayor tells the brutal truth about multicultural fantasy. These astonishing extracts are from a new book by Heinz Bukowski, the socialist mayor of Neukölln, one of the most Muslim-colonized parts of Germany and Berlin and Germany. The title of the book is Neukölln is Everywhere, suggesting that this is the future he sees for Germany and Europe as a whole. As I recall, Bukowski was one of the few who spoke in defense of Sarrazin. It will be interesting to see if publication of the book has any consequences for his position. And this is what the mayor says, quote, "At this point, for me, it's about the sense of everyday powerlessness. In a world which people move through the supermarkets, taking goods and walking past the checkout counter without paying, making it clear to the checkout woman what will happen if she gets the police involved. There, where five people walk along the pavement side by side and everyone else has to get out of the way. There, where at a red light, everyone looks ahead as straight as possible to avoid being abused by the street fights in a car next to you and ask, 'Have you got a problem? We'll solve it right now.' There, where bigger youths demand the little children pay toll or a usage fee for the climbing equipment. Where young women are asked if they want to be impregnated. Where the police and the bus driver gets cola poured over his head if he asks for a ticket. Their enemies are the hated Germans. They are the targets of their aggression, and they have nothing to oppose the flash mob with. With a summons via SMS, within a few minutes, there are many people there who immediately adopt an aggressive attitude. Germans are considered easy victims. This can affect anyone in everyday life. It could be you have a surprise if you have a little rear-end collision, namely if the other person involved in the accident can clearly be identified as an immigrant or invader. In this case, you and your counterpart will immediately be surrounded by several witnesses who have also seen everything exactly. It's not the person behind you who drove into you, but rather you sped into him while moving backwards. When in doubt, the rule is to help your ethnic sisters and brothers. What is true and what isn't has no significance when dealing with an infidel. These are the kinds of little experiences that make people here so happy with one another. We raise our children to avoid violence. We despise violence toward others and bring up our children accordingly. Others bring up their boys strong, brave, ready to fight. The starting situation is unequal. Well, you better learn to fight then, Mr. White Mayor, because there's a time when all that shit's got to go out the window and you take action. Now, here's a soundtrack from sort of a black humorous type thing about World War II and the SS.
They're coming. Now we'll see how these Russians deal with a crack SS division.
Hans?
Have courage, my friend.
Yeah.
Hans, I've just noticed something.
These communists are all cowards.
Have you looked at our caps recently?
Our caps?
The badges on our caps. Have you looked at them?
What? No. A bit?
They've got skulls on them. Have you noticed that our caps have actually got little pictures of skulls on them?
I don't...
Hans, are we the baddies?
We should be able to hold them at this point here, at least for a few hours.
And why skulls, though?
What?
Why skulls?
Well, maybe they're the skulls of our enemies.
Maybe. But is that how it comes across? I mean, it doesn't say next to the skull, you know, yeah, we killed him, but trust us, this guy was horrid.
Well, no, but...
I mean, what do skulls make you think of? Death, cannibals, beheading, pirates.
Pirates are fun.
I didn't say we weren't fun, but fun or not, pirates are still the baddies. I just can't think of anything good about a skull.
What about pure Aryan skull shape?
Even that is more usually depicted with the skin still on. Whereas the Allies...
Oh, you haven't been listening to Allied propaganda. Of course they're going to say we're the bad guys.
But they didn't get to design our uniforms. And their symbols are all, you know, quite nice. Stars, stripes, lions, sickles.
What's so good about a sickle?
Well, nothing. And obviously, if there's one thing we've learnt in the last 1,000 miles of retreat, is that Russian agriculture is in dire need of mechanisation.
Tell me about it.
But you've got to say, it's better than a skull. I mean, I really can't think of anything worse as a symbol than a skull.
A rat's anus?
Yeah, and if we were fighting an army marching under the banner of a rat's anus, I'd probably be a lot less worried, Hans.
Okay. So...
a problem with Detective Harrison.
Yes, Mr. Harrison has an irritating talent for disrupting my arrangements.
Would you like me to have him removed?
Yes, perhaps. Perhaps it would be better if Mr. Harrison were taken out of the picture.
Sorry, guys, you're doing it again.
What, Alan?
Have him removed. Take him out of the picture. I thought we agreed at the meeting that these terms are needlessly ambiguous.
I suppose.
We all agreed that from now on, when we want someone murdered, i.e. deliberately killed to death, then that's what we're going to say.
Look, everyone knows what we mean.
Well, on this occasion, perhaps. I mean, that was an order to murder Detective Harrison, right?
He has become a nuisance.
Right, but a nuisance we should murder. Is that it? I mean, my nephew's a nuisance, but... you see what I mean?
Yes. Yeah, all right.
Well, can you say it then, please?
Okay. Please deal with the Harrison situation.
You see, that's no good.
Oh, that was perfectly clear.
Oh, what are you talking about, Keith? This is going to be let's hope Professor Ritson meets with a little accident all over again. We spent 9 months hoping that Professor Ritson would meet with an accident before Leslie made it clear it was an accident we were supposed to make happen.
All right, you've made your point. You two get on with your work now.
Oh, murdering?
Yes. Oh, and Alan. Perhaps I'll see you later for a little light refreshment.
Do you mean anal sex?
Yes.
All right.
Forgive the blindfold, Mr. Cooch. An unfortunate necessity, I fear. I bid you welcome to the new headquarters of my organization.
Yeah, very nice. Call me Ryan.
Alas, I abhor informality. To business. Permit me to outline for you, if I may, the amusements I wish you to realize for me. This wall, for example. A sturdy and unyielding wall, wouldn't you say? But what I require, Mr. Cooch, is a cunning mechanism whereby pressure applied to a lever camouflaged as, shall we say, this volume of Miss Katie Price's Being Jordan will rotate the entire wall to reveal on its dexter side, well, that need not concern you. Is that clear?
You want it not through?
No, you misapprehend me. The wall must remain, yet rotate. It must be there, yet not there.
You are a hatch.
No, Mr. Cooch, not a hatch. I wish for the entire wall to rotate, turn upon its axis, roundy round.
Why?
I just do.
Right, well, can't be done, I'm afraid. This is a load-bearing wall.
Nevertheless.
No, I mean, if it was this wall that you wanted to, what, rotate, is it?
Yes, rotate.
Well, it would be a huge job, but I think there's a way you could do it.
Well, somewhat less impressive, but the roaring fire lends a certain je ne sais quoi.
No, a fire would have to go.
By no means. It is integral to the effect that the fire burns merrily in the grate as the wall turns.
Look, mate, if you rotate a wall with a burning fire in it, the effect that you'll get is a room full of smoke. I can't revolve the chimney, mate. It's down to health and safety.
Forgive my levity, Mr. Cooch, but when you come to know me better, you will learn that neither health nor safety are among my primary concerns.
Look, if you want to rotate this wall, here's what you need to do. Fireplace decommissioned, yellow and black edging around all moving sections, clear, well-lit signage saying, warning, this wall may revolve.
I begin to find you tiresome, Mr. Cooch.
Don't get personal, mate. It's not me with a bonkers interior designer.
Look, if not a revolving wall, then how about a nice, simple trapdoor?
Trapdoor? Yeah, it sounds possible.
Excellent. Well, I want them under each of these seats with chutes leading down to a tank full of ravenous piranhas.
Fair enough. We'll have that done by Tuesday.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the true purpose of the Calippo organization. Now, doubtless this may come as a shock to some of you. So let me assure you, if any of you have any moral qualms about my little proposition, you're more than welcome to simply walk away. So, any niggling little doubts?
Yes, I thought that all sounded a bit... So, I might go, if that's all right. But I won't tell anyone, I swear.
No, Hugo. I know you won't.
Well, no, I won't.
No, I'm quite sure you won't.
What's that?
Nothing. Don't you worry about that.
Business news now, and the Bank of England have announced interest rates are set to...
I'm sorry, Paul. I'm going to have to interrupt you there. We're just getting reports of some astonishing breaking news. It appears that an invasion of the Earth by an unknown but vastly powerful extraterrestrial aggressor is underway. Details are sketchy, but reports are pouring in from across the world of vast, metallic, crab-like creatures laying waste to all they encounter.
So, a massive and unstoppable alien attack threatens the Earth. What's your reaction? Are you affected by the end of civilization as we know it? What's your perspective? Maybe you live on Earth or know someone who does. How do you feel about it? Email us with your thoughts on your imminent molecular evaporation at bbc.co.uk/emergency-apocalypse-address, all one word, and let us know.
And already this issue seems to be one that's provoked a lot of comment. Lucinda Richards from London asks, will these so-called aliens be required to pay the congestion charge? Somehow I think not. It's one rule for us and another rule for alien beings.
And Gerard from Dover called our letterline number to say, as someone approaching my 80th birthday, I think I'm entitled to comment, 'twas ever thus. I can remember when a certain Mr. Hitler bethought himself to overthrow this sceptred isle, and like him, I think these aliens might find that simple British folk are rather harder to conquer than... And then it just tails off into screams.
A quick update for any of you for some reason more interested in the news than what some people who don't know think about the news. London has fallen to the aliens. But more importantly, I can also tell you that Sophie from Manchester says, say what you like about the alien killer crabs, but by God, they can organise an invasion. We have a lot to learn from them, though we'd better be quick.
And last...
It's all bullshit, folks. It's all bullshit and it's bad for you. Now, speaking of parents and speaking of bullshit, two ideas which aren't always mutually exclusive, by the way, I'd like to mention a special kind of bullshit that has taken hold in this country in the last 30 to 40 years. It's a form of bullshit that really only can be called child worship. It's child worship. It's this excessive devotion to children. I'm talking about today's professional parents, these obsessive diaper sniffers who are overscheduling and overmanaging their children and robbing them of their childhoods. Even the simple act of playing. Even the simple act of playing has been taken away from children and put on mommy's schedule in the form of play dates. Something that should be spontaneous and free is now being rigidly planned. When does a kid ever get to sit in the yard with a stick anymore? You know, just sit there with a fucking stick. Do today's kids even know what a stick is? You know? You sit in the yard with a fucking stick and you dig a fucking hole. You know? And you look at the hole, and you look at the stick, and you have a little fun. But kids don't have sticks anymore. I don't think there are any sticks left. I think they've all been recalled because of lead paint. Who would have thought that one day the manufacturing of sticks would be outsourced to China? But you know something, a kid shouldn't be wasting his time with a stick anyway. If he's 4 years old, he should be home studying for his kindergarten entrance exams. Do you know about that shit? Oh, they have them now. Yeah, yeah. There are places that have kindergarten entrance exams. The poor little fuck. The poor little fuck, he can barely locate his dick. You know, and already he's being pressured to succeed. Pressured to succeed for the sake of the parents. Isn't this really just a sophisticated form of child abuse? And speaking of that, speaking of child abuse, next up, grade school. Grade school, where he won't be allowed to play tag because it encourages victimization. And he won't be allowed to play dodgeball because it's exclusionary. And it promotes aggression. Standing around is still okay. Standing around is still permitted, but it won't be for long, because sooner or later some kid is going to be standing around and his foot will fall asleep and his parents will sue the school and it'll be goodbye fucking standing around. Now. Now, fortunately, all is not lost. All is not lost because at least we know that when he does get to play whatever games he is allowed to play, the child will never lose. We know he'll never lose because in today's America, no child ever loses. There are no losers anymore. Everyone's a winner. No matter what the game or sport or competition, everybody wins. Everybody wins, everybody gets a trophy. No one is a loser. No child these days ever gets to hear those all-important character-building words, "You lost, Bobby." You lost. You're a loser, Bobby. They miss out on that. You know what they tell a kid who lost these days? You were the last winner. A lot of these kids never get to hear the truth about themselves until they're in their 20s, when their boss calls them in and says, Bobby, clean the shit out of your desk and get the fuck out of here. You're a loser. Get the fuck out of here. Of course, Bobby's parents can't understand why he can't hold a job. In school, he was always on the honor roll. Well, what they don't understand, of course, is that in today's schools, everyone is on the honor roll. Everyone is on the honor roll because, in order to be on the honor roll, all you really need to do is to maintain a body temperature somewhere roughly in the 90s. Well, we shouldn't be worrying about how he's doing in school. Let's not worry about that, because come summertime, he'll be off to camp. Yes, he'll be off to camp, but not to swim and hike and play softball. No, 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 no. Today's child will be sent away to lose weight. He'll be sent to fat camp, or computer camp, or violin camp, or ceramics camp, or leadership camp, whatever the fuck that is. Leadership camp. Isn't that where Hitler went? Specialized, structured summer camps. Got to keep the little fucker busy, you know? Got to keep the little fucker busy. Wouldn't want him to sneak in a little unstructured time in the woods. That wouldn't be any good. God knows he might start jacking off. Now just...
Well, that's it, boys and girls. That's it for today. Moon's Day. We'll be back tomorrow, Tuesday. That'll be the 21st. And, in the meantime, don't let them in your house, unless they got a warrant. Don't let them in. And if they want you to go down to the station, just say, we'd like for you to come down to the station. Say, no, I don't think so. You have a warrant? No. Then go back to your station, because I'm not going down there. Well, we just have a few questions here. We know you're innocent, but we want to clear a few things up. Get my lawyer and keep my pie hole shut.